Welcome to the Conway Show. We are privileged to have on Tristan Tomasino from Buxton Real Estate. He's a fine man and a member of our facility and one that supported us through our journey at TPC with sponsorships and stuff like that. And he's just a man with a big heart. So welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, mate. Good to be here.
I'm looking forward to this chat. Oh, thanks, mate. Looking forward to this chat because we're going to talk all things business. The story behind where you are and how you are, I guess, to get to the point in your life now with kids and business and going through, primary school, private school, and then going through in terms of how you, I guess, deal with the stresses and of life, which is one of the biggest things these days.
Yeah, no, it's mate, been looking forward to this for a while. It's exciting. Hopefully some people can get some little things out of it. You know, I know all of us, when we listen to a podcast, we, you know, as long as we can get one or two things out of it, that's really all that matters. And hopefully telling my story, I think it's not too special, but, you know, there's some things there that hopefully people can get out of it.
Oh, of course. Yeah. They'll get plenty out of this one. So this is a... let's go through a bit of a... Take us through a bit of a story in terms of your upbringing, family and primary school and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, so... I was very fortunate to have a very sheltered life, really, in early days. Grew up in Hannon Street, Willy, but standard real estate family. I think we've lived in 15 homes since Hannon Street. Mum and Dad only stayed there for a year, and then we kind of moved around West Footscray, Yarraville, but always lived in the inner west. Absolutely love the inner west, still live here today, and have always worked locally. But... And I went to St. Margaret Mary's in Spotswood.
Same with me.
Small world. So I went to St. Margaret Mary's in Spotswood and then was very lucky. Mum and Dad, you know, had an amazing work ethic. And I think one of the things they always wanted to do was to provide a private school education for my sister, Electra, and I. And so I went to St. Kevin's College, which, living in Yarraville at the time, was a very big deal. A lot of the kids I was friends with, they ended up going to like CBC or DLA. I was the only one to go to St. Kevin's. And at the time, and same as you went to Skevs, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when I went there early 2000s, it wasn't anywhere near it is now. Like it is probably the best private school in Melbourne, I'd say.
I think it's changed a little bit from people coming over the bridge. Definitely like the trains are full of St. Kevin's when I was there. Or not full, but there was definitely more so than probably when you were... When you went, definitely.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I was the only kid. Apart from, I had three mates that lived in Williamstown, Newport, and I was the only one kind of inner west. So it was a bit tough, to be honest. Like, bullying. Yeah, you'd say bullying, being from the west, that kind of Footscray stigma when you're there. And you know how it is, you've got kids that live in Brighton, Glen Iris. You know, there's really affluent areas in Melbourne. But in saying that, that was only in the early stages. Once you get into year 9, 10, you know, you've been at the school for 3, 4 years, you've got a really good bunch of mates. It's a completely different story. But early days, it was, year 7, 8 was really tough.
Most of those kids don't come over this side of the bridge. You know what I mean? When I went there in year 10, 11, 12, again, it was a little bit different. And there were a few more, my best mate was coming from Willy, and there was more people coming from this side of town, but still, like, people were like, I mean, over the other side of the bridge, what's that like?
Well, the funny thing is that a lot of these guys now live in the western suburbs, right?
Because that's true.
You know, you live in Toorak, Brighton, Glen Iris with your mum and dad, but it's hard to buy a house over that side of town for $3 or $4 million when you're in your mid-20s and you're still paying off your hex fees from studying law. So a lot of mates moved to the west, which was quite funny, and some of them I give a bit of stick to. But, you know, yeah, just that natural progression of, I guess, real estate in Melbourne. Not everyone can afford to live in those areas once they move out of home.
So I'm taking it to a close-knit family dynamic. So I'm close with your sister and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so it's just my sister and I, Electra. We're, you know, about 20 months apart, so I'm older. But, yeah, you know, she was – my best man, you could say, in the wedding, and I was her best maid of honour, or however you want to call it. So we're really close. We've been pretty much inseparable since we were born. Played lacrosse together, tennis all the time. Like, yeah, so, and we've just, that relationship has just developed into, you know, she's got a little boy, Hendrix, who's gorgeous, and there's obviously my two boys now, and it's just those different chapters of life, which I think is really special. But, yeah, and we live around, literally around the corner from each other in Yarraville. So, yeah.
So how does that upbringing, I guess, determine the way you bring up your family and see your family growth and with the kids and how close they want to be or how close you want them to be and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I definitely, like, we had a very sheltered upbringing. Mum and dad, like, we never went for out. We never went without, so I was trying to say. So we almost spoilt, I'll be honest. You know, mum and dad had a very strong work ethic for us. From the age of probably 10 or 11 years old, we were working in the family businesses. Mum owned Tatsuto shop, post office, and a furniture shop. And Electra and I would always work in there. The first thing in the morning before primary school and high school, we'd sort the mail. And then I guess probably that comes back to what you were saying with, you know, we're just always together, but we were brought up the same way. There was no special treatment, which, yep, I guess with your kids, you don't have that, right? But that's something that I look at my kids and I want them to know that life will be tough and there'll be really hard times. But, you know, if you have your sibling to rely on, which Electra has done from day one, I think that's probably the most important thing is having that person to lean on. And yes, you've got, you know, you've got Nikki Mae, I've got Eliza, but you know, early on, you don't have those people. So Electra has been like that, and that's how I kind of envisage Sonny and Raph being. But also knowing that, you know, the both of you have got to work hard in life to get where you want. It's just not going to be given to you on a platter.
It's an interesting one, seeing, like, the growth of growing up and seeing how your family is. And then you sort of go two ways. You can see, okay, the family I had, the upbringing I have, I want that to give that to my kids, or, and that's what I'm hearing from you, or you go the other way in terms of you sort of learn and you see what you don't want to happen in your family, which is what I had. Mm. So it's a bit like, I don't want that, I need to give this. And it's very similar to what I'm hearing from you, is you want to give them exactly the same upbringing that you had, to give them the best chance in life and to know that, do you know what I mean, they're going to have family and siblings and that sort of by their side, and they're not going to be given everything. But work ethic is going to be a massive thing, and we need to teach them that from a young age. But showing them love and showing them, I mean, that what the world can be, even through those sort of stresses of all those dark times or yep, things you need to work through in life, that, you know, I mean, we can work through this all together.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And, you know, going back to private school education, it's not cheap. St. Kevin's expensive when I went there, and it's getting even more expensive now, but I've got both of them down at St. Kevin's. Yeah. And Electra went to Star of the Sea. So, you know, having that initial education, but we, throughout high school, like weekends around playing sport, because we're really sports orientated, but around all of that, there was this constant in the background, just the work ethic from mum and dad. It was always helping out in the family business, essentially.
Yep.
Which for me, you know, like working Saturdays, working Sundays now in real estate, it's just like a given. So that 9 to 5 mentality for me has been non-existent since I was like 11 years old, because it's been ingrained in me from dad, who's got an Italian background, came out from Italy. You know, my nonna and nonna had to just pave the way. And then my mum, you know, my mum is just an absolute workhorse. She retired a year ago, but, you know, she's just an amazing woman that from day one I've just looked up to so much. So
it's important to have those role models, definitely. Definitely. And if you don't have those role models, then it's sort of, which way to the path does that person go? And it can be quickly go down a sort of a bad path.
Yep.
So talk to us about, I guess, St. Kevin's. Let's go there first and going to a private school and the pressures of, I mean, getting good enter score, if that's what you're going for. Or, I mean, most kids there are going to a private school. They're getting sent by their parents to get a good education. I'm the only one that probably went there to sport. And
me as well, mate. Don't worry. Put my hand up.
So tell us about that.
So like you, I love sport in general. Actually, not like you. I didn't like AFL, didn't like playing it. Absolutely love watching it. But I love tennis and soccer and, you know, lacrosse, obviously, I became obsessed with. But that's what I loved about Skevs was that sport orientated background. The school was really heavy on that. But I wasn't – I was terrible at school. I had mates who – you know, they're doctors, they're chemical engineers, they're project managers on big construction sites. I'm the real estate agent. But, you know, I had this constant just obsession with making money. And I think that started from when we were 11 years old, mum would take us to Young's auctions in over the other side of town, and whatever profit, so we'd buy an item for, say, $300 a couch, and then whatever it sold for in a shop, say $450, Electra and I would get to keep that profit. And we'd only get it to buy one item. Obviously, she, mum got to buy the rest. But there was just that constant thirst for making money. So all throughout high school, I was working multiple jobs compared to a lot of my mates that didn't actually work. They were studying, right? So studying year 11, 12. I was working outside of those hours before school or on the weekends, and that naturally, yeah, it affected my education from the point of view of I didn't get a grade into school that probably allowed me to go to uni, but on the flip side, I didn't see myself going to university anyway. I was purely at school, firstly because my parents had given me this amazing opportunity, which I probably took for granted at the time, but secondly, to socialise, and that was the one thing I loved. Was socializing with your mates.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, going out to parties on the weekend and all that sort of stuff.
I guess that's a byproduct of going to such a good school, was a community and that sort of stuff. And obviously it starts with sport, which we'll go into a bit later. But tell me about, I guess, the pressures of and what your opinion is about going to university and getting there into school. I know the pressures of, do you know what I mean? And we speak to so many parents here about, do you know what I mean, 11 and 12 students. I mean, making that and knowing, I guess, I mean, through your 18 to sort of 24, you're not going to know what you want to do. And sometimes people get so stressed about finding that career that they're in for life, and that's them. And I guess, give me your opinion on that.
So I think it's a massive misconception about going to uni. I think the pressure, like, and you know it at St. Kevin's, like, and we can only speak about that, right? Because outside of that school, I'm not sure, but I think in the APS in general, which is, you know, Scotch and Xavier and all of them, if you don't go to university, I think the school will look at you as a failure. And that's brutally honest.
100%.
You know, and I want the boys to go there, but if they don't want to go to school, and that's the great thing about, I think, Skevs now, it's got a great art drama background. But I think you don't really need to know what you want to do throughout your whole life. Like, I've got mates now that are mid-30s going back to study physio and whatnot. I think, you know, finding your passion's probably the most important thing and what you want to do in life. And whether that's when you're 50 or whether that's when you're 20, that's, it doesn't matter. But I think the whole pressure in our society around people going to uni, it needs to change, because my sister went to uni. She studied, you know, I've got one of my best mates' wives. She's just finished her degree, her master's or PhD at 30, and now she's paying back all these hex fees, right? And she studied for 12 years. And meanwhile, you know, I look at myself and the career I've built up, and it's like, well, you know, there's been a lot of hard times, but kind of established myself in that time. So I don't know. There's no perfect answer, but I think coming back to what you're saying about uni, if you don't want to go, don't go. Like, I only went because I was dating a girl at the time, and she was from Toorak, and her mum kind of said, oh, why don't you do Indonesian commerce at Deakin? And, I thought, I'll do Indonesian commerce just to impress Sarah, was the name I was dating at the time. And then first week in, that relationship fizzled, and I went to two Indonesian classes at Deakin, and pretty much dropped out of Deakin. Like, uni wasn't for me. The greatest thing about Deakin was the red light party. That was pretty much it, mate. So, school, not my strong suit.
Mate, it's the same with me. Like, I mean, I didn't get into school. I went to the exams. I probably sat in there, quickly wrote something, and then left. I was the first one that left. And And I knew I wasn't going to go to university. I really didn't put my head down at school. Well, I tried to, but then I was like, I never wagged school, but I was like, I would be at the footy oval until sort of, you probably call that wagging, yeah. But yeah. I'm down the footy oval having a kick at Gotcha's paddock until recess.
Yeah, wow.
And then rocking up, and they sort of, it was this whole thing of like, they knew where I was, and it was like, well, that's who he is, I guess. Do you know what I mean? And
accept it.
Yeah. And
so
I think,
did you go to TAFE or uni or nothing?
Nowhere.
Nothing.
No. Okay. So it was I just couldn't sit down and go through the books. Like, that was just not for me. And do you know what I mean? So, but it's funny how, like, do you know what I mean? You didn't go to university, or you went to college. We'll speak that bit later. But I mean, there was no desire to go to university. For me, I definitely wasn't going to go. But if you've got a drive and you've got a passion, like you're saying, that you can do whatever you want with life. And yes, there's going to be a lot of hard times and it won't happen straight away. But if you can build that through your own confidence and your own ability, then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll put my hand up and say that a lot of the business skills that I've had to learn myself, I probably could have learned in uni, right? And they would have come in handy. But, you know, learning algebra and square X and X and all this stuff, does it come in handy now with what I need to be as a leader and as a person in my role? Definitely not. But yeah, like I just go back to, I look at my kids now and I think whatever they want to do in life, I'm going to support. There's no right or wrong answer. Whatever they do, that's their choice. And as long as they give it their best shot, then that's all you can ask for.
Mm.
So, but I think a lot of people just get built up on, oh, I need to go to uni for 4 years. In America, if you don't go to college for 4 years, your family almost looks down on you. And it's a really big discussion at the moment. Like, Joe Rogan's all over it, because the education costs are huge, but that's just the tradition of what happens in America. And a lot of people don't want to go to college.
I think it's about changing the thought process and the whole thing about it. Mm. Like, it's not, you don't need to go to university. Yes, you do need for certain jobs, but even, like, I look at my wife and she went to 4 years, studied accounting, got into a top four firm with Deloitte and absolutely hated it.
Mm.
Absolutely hated it. Like, was working ridiculous hours. Like,
getting
there at 6, getting home at 8, 9. Like, it was, and she just had no passion for it at all. Yep. Like, she just did it because I think there was not pressure from family, but you go to university, and she was real, like, she put pressure on herself to go. And then what she wanted to do, okay, well, accounting makes a lot of money. If you're a good accountant, okay, I've got to go do that. And I think that's the whole thing about, I mean, you're not going to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. And I mean, you don't need to go and do a university course for which makes you the most money, because in the end, you might hate your job, which, I mean, you've only got one life. Why would you want to do something you absolutely hate?
Yeah, so, and I've had, probably similar to you, I've had resumes come across my desk that, you know, look, when we're looking to hire people and they've had 10 to 12 jobs. And for a lot of employers, that would probably scare them. But I love that because they've got life experience. They've gone through things that they don't want to do and they're just figuring themselves out versus, mate, you're spot on. Someone straight out of uni, they don't know what they're actually in for until they start working and they go, wow, I've just wasted 4 years of my life.
I hear it so much where, like, do you know what I mean? Someone will go from one university degree to another, like, each year trying to find out exactly what, and literally they're just pushing their life like another 4 years trying to get to this course. In the end, they get through 2 years of that one and they actually don't like what
change
they're doing.
Again.
Do you know what I mean? So, so let's talk about, so you finished school, we're working, or we went to college
so
straight away?
Finished school, did the year at Deakin, and then I saved up for a bit because I got into a Division II college, right? So Division I colleges, it's like the pinnacle, but you have to be so smart to go to a Division I school. You've got your SATs, which they grade you before you go over to America, and if you don't obviously make it past a certain point grade-wise, you can't get into a Division I school. So all the kind of stigma around, like, you know, NFL players, those people are the smartest people in America in those Division I schools, right? So anyway, I got into a Division II school and I had to kind of pay my way a little bit. So mum and dad said, we'll help you out, but you need to pay away a little bit as well. So it was 4 years, got kind of like a half scholarship. Went over there for a year. I was meant to be there for four, as I said, and it's just not what I thought it would be. It was in the deep south of South Carolina. It's a completely different country to, like, New York or LA or whatever, right? It's they've still got the southern flags up and stuff. It's really intense. We had a drive-by at practice one day, so not at us, but literally around the corner, you know, the closed down the whole fields and stuff. So that was eye-opening for me at like 19, 20, but it also was something I always wanted to do. Don't regret, got to train like a professional athlete every day. You're still in school studying, but outside of that, you are literally either sleeping you're literally working out 24/7, either practicing or you're in the gym.
So you got back from college.
Yep.
We don't regret it, but the things you were doing probably weren't what you thought you were going to be doing in terms of...
So your freshman year at college, you literally, it's like year 12 all over again in Australia. So I was studying biology. I hated science at school, seriously. Yeah, like, too. Get rid of science. What the... Anyway, so biology, I failed that. Failed a lot. But biology, mathematics, English...
Indonesian?
American history. I actually love history. I'm obsessed with history. So American history, which I didn't mind. But I was just like, what am I doing here? You know, this is not what I envisaged. So I decided after a year, I went to Hawaii for about a week on the way back, surfed, but I was by myself. So, you know, I feel like I'm pretty independent in that sort of aspect. So I went there by myself for a week and then came back and surprised Electra for her birthday. And then naturally, and you ask anyone that works in real estate now, everyone goes, oh, I never intended to work in real estate. It just kind of fell into my lap. And literally that's what actually happened in the family business. Dad said, we've got an opening in sales. Someone's left. Do you want to start in my little team? And that was like, I was May the 10th, 2008, started officially in real estate full time.
So before that, I had a few other sort of makeshift jobs to get to that point?
Yeah, like labouring. Yep. You know, like I listened to your podcast the other week, mate. It was emptying containers there for a little bit out of Sunshine Road, yep. Tottenham, Braybrook. You know, yeah. I remember there was one factory you probably did. It was like a seafood factory. It was like -5. And anyway, so I did that, but the pay was really good. Worked at the Australian Open Commonwealth Games and stuff, selling programs, but nothing of substance,
yep.
Essentially. So didn't see myself doing a trade, and I didn't see when I got that job working for Dad, I really didn't think that would be the career I would do.
Yep.
I thought it would be a short-term role for a kind of, you know, just a short while before figuring out what I wanted to do. You know, yep. I was 21 at the time.
Yep, so 21, and then we fast forward couple of years. So you're working in the business, family business. Your dad and uncle own it.
Yeah, so 2008 to 2011, started seeing a girl, thought she was going to be the one. Won't say her name, she's a Williamstown girl, but and thought she'd be the one, get married, blah, blah, blah. Life was amazing. The business was really good. You know, I was very close to my uncle, who was also my godfather at the time. And dad and my uncle had a really good business. Life was just great. There was nothing wrong at all. And yep. It was really easy for me because I was still living at home. You know, I got taken care of. Mum would do the washing. She cooked me dinner. It was cruisy.
Yep.
It was cruisy. And that all kind of spiraled out of control pretty quickly.
Yeah. So talk to us through, I mean, what happened in those, I mean, yeah, when you were 24,
so pretty much started 2012. The girl I was seeing at the time decided, you know what, yeah, want to move to London, relationship's done. And then from there, my uncle and my dad had a massive falling out in the business, which, as you know, can happen, as a lot of people probably listening to this know, can happen. But we were a very, very close family. We lived all very, like, close to each other, typical Italian family, you know. My uncle was about 15 years younger than my dad, so he's actually closer in age to me than my dad. So I was almost like a father figure, almost like another brother, really, that I never had. You know, he'd take me hunting and fishing and all that sort of stuff. They just had a massive falling out, went to the Supreme Court. They spent tens of thousands of dollars in costs because they couldn't agree on, obviously, the buyout of the business. And this is over the space of about 12 months. And I was kind of just in the middle of all this, not knowing what to do, who do I speak to, and where to support dad, but he's my uncle. And anyway, I kind of decided to cut ties with my uncle and my auntie and my cousins and support dad and mum. And From their dad, got diagnosed with MSA, multiple system atrophy, which is a very progressed form of motor neuron disease. So basically, given about 3 to 4 years to live, it attacks your organs and slowly over time you shut down. So the hardest thing for anyone that knew my dad was he was a very kind of like me in a way, probably even more so, very big character and, you know, just well known in the real estate world in terms of the inner west, just a very boisterous sort of character. And basically to see him physically shrivel, mentally he was there, he was constantly fighting, you just look in his eyes and you could tell, but over time, stop walking, stop eating, over the space of kind of 3 to 4 years, was incredibly hard while I was in the middle of figuring out, do I want to run the business? Do I want to work in real estate? Do I abandon this sinking ship? What do we do?
Yeah. So going through, I guess, and up until that date, it's been going well. Life's been, you know what I mean, not all roses, but we're tracking along nicely. And then all of a sudden, it sort of goes pear-shaped.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with the stresses, and how did you go with your mental health and all that sort of stuff and the family dynamics and all of that?
Yeah, so, yeah, that was probably the hardest time of my life. And I say my life because I look at myself now, and I'll get into it in a little bit, but I'm all about perspective now. So, you know, at that point in time, though, for me personally, I became a really selfish person. I didn't really care about anyone else, even as bad as I feel saying this, you know, like my mum and my dad. I was all about, why is this happening to me? And essentially I just, for probably 2 to 3 years, just went off the rails a little bit. Like, I was still committed to work, and I can say hand on heart now, like, I never would go out on a Friday night knowing that I had opens and auctions on a Saturday. But from Saturday until, you know, Sunday, Monday, I was out. And really, that was about 2 years, mate. That was about 2 years where I was kind of just going through a really dark place mentally. I was really struggling. And that's why I love the Holler Foundation so much, because I think with a lot of people out there, they don't put up their hand, you know, from the outside in. People would have thought, oh, it's fine, it's just a stage. But I was really struggling, and my mum was caring for my dad. My sister, as much as she could, was trying to help, but I didn't want that help either. So, and you know, there's only so much that your friends and family can do. So I remember vividly, it was early 2014, and I've actually never told anyone this story before, but I don't even think Eliza knows. So here you go. But yeah, early 2014, I'd been out Saturday night and passed out of the mates and kicked off on Sunday again. My mum was obviously very worried about me at this point in time. I was about 23. And she ended up calling Frogger, who a lot of people know, and said, Matt, I don't know, haven't heard from Tristan in a few days. I don't know where he is. I'm really worried. And Matt made a few calls and found out where I was. And he called my mate and said, I'm going to be around there in half an hour. Tell Tristan he needs to be out the front, and I'm driving him home. It's about Sunday night, I don't know, 10 or 11 o'clock. So I've gone out the front, and he's got Listerine, toothpaste, bottle of water. He says, brush your teeth before you go home. Here's some deodorant. And he took me home, right? Anyway, mum had a talk to me the next day and said, basically, I'm really concerned for you. You're burning the candle at both ends. You know, I don't know what you're doing socially, but never see you on weekends. You know, I'm really struggling with your dad. I need your help, blah, blah, blah. And mentally, I just clocked out. I did the same thing the next weekend, went out. And I'll never forget, I was sitting on the couch on the Sunday and my dad was sitting opposite me watching Schindler's List, which I don't know if a lot of people have seen, but it's an amazing movie about World War II. And I was really hungover and I looked at my dad, I was watching this movie, and at that point in time, it just all hit me. And I get a bit emotional talking about this now still, it's about 10 years on, but it all hit me because I was like, what am I doing? Like, you know, I'm carrying on, I'm being a child, Here's this person that's really struggling mentally, physically, can't walk in the space of the last 2 years. And, what am I doing with my life? I'm being it all just kind of kicked in, right?
Yep.
So from that day onwards, it was still a bit of a battle, but from that day onwards, my whole life was about perspective, mate. It was around, you know, and I've got it on my phone, I can show you now, but my alarm every morning is my worst day is someone's best day. There is always someone worse off than me. You look around the world, you look at what's going on at the moment, we know someone that passed away a couple of weeks ago, 28 years of age, and there's all these things in life that, you know, I had it so good and so easy still, and a lot of people were doing it tough, right? So from that day on, I decided, there's a great quote by Mark Twain. He says that the two most important days in your life are when you're born and when you find out why. And I think I found out why that day, and that was kind of to get that pride back.
In myself.
So pride back in myself, get probably my mum and dad, they'd always been proud of me, but I think that kind of waned a little bit, my sister as well, and build that back up and help out with the business. And kind of that has been since then, and unfortunately my dad passed away 3 years later, but since that day, I've always, my mindset, and you ask Eliza, you ask my sister, I honestly think I'm not pumping up my own tires here. Physically I'm not, but mentally I'm a very strong person now.
So what you've gone through has made you a stronger person from that experiences and that, and I guess, I mean, seeing your dad there and all that sort of stuff that went on with that, and then with your uncle and the business and that sort of stuff, quite easily you could have spiraled more out of control. And I guess that's the hardest thing that most people have, is to be able to pull themselves in. Your mum's seen it, and then your probably friends have seen it, and to pull you into line. And then the way that you can actually get out of that is by yourself.
Yep.
And having that, I guess, that moment like you had, is from that point on, was it like, I'm doing this for my dad because he's sick, or my family, or was it because I'm doing this because I've got to pull my shit together, or what was the thought process?
It was everything. Yes, definitely for my dad, and he'd built up this amazing business. I wanted to get that business back to where it wanted to be, where it deserved to be, to support the whole family, mum as well. So I stepped up every Friday. I would take dad to the Alpha. He ended up getting throat cancer as well, and he had to have radiotherapy every Friday at the Alfred. We'd take him to a hyperbaric chamber in South Yarra every Friday as well, and he'd get B12 injection, that sort of stuff. To all these things, we were trying to prolong his life, right? And because his will to live was so strong, and this is probably one of the other things that inspired me, is here's this guy, he's trying to fight every day, and I'm kind of carrying on. And I'm not saying I'm perfect now by any means, we're all a work in progress, but that was probably one of the things that inspired me. So I stepped up in that regard. I was doing things at 23, 24, 25, mate, to help my dad. He couldn't go to the toilet by himself, So there's all these things in life that they're life experiences, and whatever way you adapt to it is how it'll probably shape you for the rest of your life. Mm. But I guess for me, it was, mate, you put the nail on the head, it was getting my shit together, because I had an amazing opportunity. And that's probably the hardest thing for me personally now. I think a lot of people see the overnight success.
Yep.
And they think, wow, he's so lucky, look at him. That's the way that people look at successful people. I'm not saying I'm successful. I've done well, and I'm continuing to build the business and whatnot, but it's been a long road to get here. And a lot of people are, it's a family business, he inherited that. I had one person call me the other week, and I won't go into details, but they said something about inheriting the business and blah blah blah, and Eliza was in the car and she goes, don't worry about it, just keep going. But there's just this assumption, whereas we're very close to closing the doors. That was making a profit. I had to take over and learn so much. It's been a long journey, but that was probably the turning point for it.
obviously your mental health would have taken a battering during that time. Like you got the stresses of trying to keep this business open and then try to grow it. And then you've got all your family stuff going on. How did you go with that and how did you deal with it?
So the first thing I did was I surrounded myself with people that were better than me in real estate. So I flew up to Sydney, caught up with some of the best operators in Australia real estate wise. And this is the thing that people should never be afraid, whether it's in real estate or, you know, whatever career you're doing, reach out to people that are better than you, because those people are so giving. Every single one of them said, no worries, mate, come up, we'll meet you. I learned so much. I also got a real estate coach who kind of ended up he's become a really good mate. He was at my wedding and essentially a life coach as well. Meditated. So I started taking up meditation.
Yeah.
And
fitness was still a big part during this time, or did it?
No,
did it?
Nah, fitness dropped off.
Yep.
Fitness dropped off. I stopped playing lacrosse because I had to make a choice between lacrosse. And this was the other, I was very lucky initially when I won, you know, I won the 4 premierships at Willie, which was always a lifelong goal. I never thought I'd win any lacrosse premiership because I played at Footscray, lost multiple and then went to Willie. But, you know, I was finishing work on Saturdays at 12 o'clock. Dad would cover for me. I'd go play lacrosse. Unfortunately, in real estate, that's not the reality. You have to work until 3, 4, 5 o'clock or whenever the deal gets done on a Saturday.
Yep.
So I had to kind of give that away. And, because I was going out so much and drinking and, you know, just my health, just mentally, I couldn't get myself up to go to the gym, right? Mm. So the only outlet was, you know, I might go for the odd surf with mates, but that was really it. Nothing like I honestly think the last 12 months I've probably been in the fittest shape of my life, even when I played lacrosse.
Yep.
Ever.
And how has that impacted you with work and stresses of family and that sort of stuff?
Oh, mate, so without a doubt, mentally, physically, it's the old, if you feel good, then like in real estate, as bad as it seems, like you need to look good. If you don't look the part, clients see that, right? And they're maybe not going to give you the business. So, but I think it comes back to confidence as well. If you're not working out and pushing yourself, like turf games, mate, I wouldn't have done that without you getting in my ear. I'm doing, you know, the run in a few months, which once again, you got in my ear about, and I hate long distance running. That's what I love so much about this place. But yeah, like it's just helped me mentally with work, and the market's tough. It's really tough at the moment. We've gone through COVID as well. But real estate at the moment, is probably, you know, the business side of it is getting hit a lot worse than during COVID. So that's changed my life in terms of working out. But back then it was non-existent.
I want to go back before I go forward. So 24 years old, you're taking over the business. What were the pressures like and how did you deal with pressure? Because obviously you'd have pressures through, I mean, grand finals and all that sort of stuff. But when you're actually like the business is in your hands, your dad's severely ill, how did you go with having all that on your shoulders? And I know as a business owner, like still you would be like, this is my family. Like I've got to support everyone and all the pressure to be on your shoulders every single day. How do you deal with that?
So when I mentally came good, I had that perspective about life isn't that bad. I'm very lucky to live in Australia, an amazing country, blah, blah, blah. And we can go on all day about how lucky we are to live here, and you know, I get the opportunity every morning to wake up and go to the gym, whereas other people around the world don't get that, as bad as that seems. You know, I knew that there was light at the end of the tunnel. I just had to keep going. And whether that took a year, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, I wasn't going to give up. That was probably the biggest thing, is that I knew, and that's why I stuck at real estate, because I was good at it. I'd never been good at anything work-wise.
Yep.
As soon as I saw my first property in real estate, that's when I knew like it was it for me. And I had no plan B. There was no backup option. So when you've got that behind you, you're all in. And I had just this massive purpose and hunger to succeed. And obviously, you know, I don't say we're there yet, but the business is in a lot better place. But yeah, you've just mentally, you've got to be strong on all fronts though. Physically going to the gym, you've got to have a life coach, a coach in the industry. I learned so much. So I read a lot.
Yep. What sort of books?
So obviously anything to do with business, autobiographies, podcasts. You know, I've got an Audible subscription as well. So, you know, like we went to Fiji recently. I think I smashed out like 4 books in 2 days.
I want you to give me your 3 best business books for any sort of entrepreneur or any business owner out there.
Yeah, Cut to the Chase by Stuart Levine. It's an easy read. So basically it's all about time management and how in, yeah, like I won't go into detail, but it's all about time management. That was a game changer for me initially, just how to manage your time in a business because, you know, I wasn't just working on the revenue side of things. I was trying to build a team as well, mate, exactly like you, right? So you've got 2 facets of a business.
Yeah.
So
you're either working in the business or on the business.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. And I knew that early on I couldn't do it by myself. You need good people in your business to build it, to grow, to rely on. You've spoken about this on the last podcast, which was brilliant. So, yeah, that they were the 2 sides of it. So that was that book about, obviously, Stuart Levine. The other one is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
Yep.
So great book. Guy started Nike.
Yep.
I don't really need to go into too much detail about that one. To be honest, the other one, which is probably going to be a bit intense, and I'm a bit of a spiritual person now, I won't say religious-wise, but Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl,
yep.
About World War II.
Yep.
So one of my goals for probably the last 10 years has been to go to Auschwitz, and I'm very fortunate to say I'm going there in June this year, which is going to be, I won't say amazing, that's a wrong word to use, but it's something I've always wanted to do. So, but Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, just a very intense book, but it's just kind of a calibration on how lucky we are with the life we've got. And, you know, opening a business, running a business, is pretty easy compared to what happened to these people. So they're kind of the 3 books. There's a heap of others. Tim Grosvenor, I think I sent it to you, Winning. That,
yep.
I've read that the last month and that's been a game changer mindset-wise.
Yep.
So Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan's coach as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very interesting to hear, Jeremy, your take on business, and it's so similar to what, I mean, my take is in terms of you have to be all in and there's no plan B and you've literally just got to put all your eggs in the basket and the work ethic, which I think is a word you use a lot, is it needs to be there. You might not have all the talent in the world, but the work ethic, if you've got that behind you, then you can get what you need to get. And so let's talk about real estate now. Working in real estate for how many years now?
This will be my 19th. 19th year on and off because I worked throughout high school, but officially it'll be 16 years.
16 years. Yeah. So when you took over, was it a Big and Scott?
It was Big and Scott.
Yep.
Yeah, family business, yep. but a franchise.
Yep.
But we were the first Big and Scott to franchise. My uncle and dad were.
Wow.
Yep.
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 So now we've transitioned over the last couple of years to Buxton Real Estate.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess give us a bit of a snapshot of what while we changed real estates and stuff like that, because I guess I see it a little bit, and I think it's an interesting business in terms of commission based. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
I don't really know too much about how, but I'm pretty sure it's commission based. Yep. So give us a bit of a snapshot about that.
So Bigger than Scott, like we were part of the franchise for 19 years, I think, or just under. And you know, I obviously. A lot of people know my wife Eliza, but she worked in real estate for 8 years before I met her. And then she started in the business as well just after my dad passed away. And now I've got Matt John, who's my business partner as well.
Yep.
And I think it was transitioning to Buxton for me. I know for a few other reasons, but for me, it was about creating my own legacy. As much as my dad and my uncle had built up this great business, Biggin and Scott, I wanted deep down to create my own kind of legacy.
Yep.
I don't mean that in a bad way. We're always going to remember what my dad and my mum to that extension as well, because she worked in the business for a very long time and carried it when my dad was really sick and I was in the state I was in. But, yeah, we decided 2 years ago. I had a few connections at Buxton. It's more that premier brand in the Bayside area, very sharp brand, which, you know, for us, we're based in Yarraville at the moment, but we have goals long-term to open up in different areas when the time is right.
Yep.
And we thought Buxton could do that for us. So, yeah.
So you were talking about Matt before, business partners. So, so tell me how important it is to have good people in your organization, and then tell me how you go about hiring more people into your team.
Yeah, so like we've got an amazing culture. We joined Buxton the first year. We joined the Buxton network of 25 offices at the awards night. We won the award for culture and diversity. So that was an amazing award, because that's something that I'm always honing and really building throughout the business. Because if you have an amazing culture that everyone buys into, the rest takes care of itself. So I'll look at who we've got, and in a way I've kind of recruited people that I feel are really aligned. A lot of them I knew, or Matt knew, or Eliza knew from previous friendships or circles of influence. So, and those people now are just really aligned with what we're about. So that's probably the first thing. When we're hiring someone, for me, I want to know about their life. And I said it before, but have they got a plan B? I say to someone, what if real estate doesn't work out for you? Oh, I'll do this. I think whether I'm going to hire them or not, I have to think twice, because they've got that backup option, especially in sales.
Yeah.
Because sales is so cutthroat in our industry that, yeah, you're not going to last. If you're property management or administration, it's maybe a bit different, because you've got that consistent income. But as you said, sales is purely commission-based. It's results-driven. It's all it is. So if someone says they sell 100 properties a year, but you get on realestate.com and they've sold 10, results don't lie. So it's very results-driven.
And is that a way that you can you build up your brand as a real estate agent and as a company?
Yeah. Sales-wise, it takes time, because it just doesn't happen overnight. And that, I'm so proud of what Matty John's been able to do, because he's come from a really nowhere, and in the space of 5 years, he's pretty much become the number one operator in our market. But his work ethic, I will never forget. In the early days, I would sometimes go to the railway. We'd knock off on a Saturday. The team would go to the railway at 2 or 3 o'clock. I'd go back in the office. He would be there at 4 or 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon calling clients after working all day, opens, auctions, same on a Friday night as well. So I like to look at people and replicate and say to someone, if you want to become successful, just look at what everyone else is doing. Look at what Matt's doing. Just follow that journey, and you'll be fine. But essentially it does take time, because you're building up your client base, your referral network. A lot of my business now is people calling me versus me calling them,
yep,
saying, hey, we spoke 4 years ago. You sold us the house. We're thinking about moving up to Queensland. Can you come around? We're making a move.
Yep.
Whereas when you start out, you don't know anyone.
Yep.
And it's a hard slog. And that is the hardest thing, and comes back to the mental side of things for me. Real estate-wise, you get rejected. You fail every single day. You make a call to someone. They've got no intention of selling. They tell you where to go. It happened to me recently. I had a client, had a deal go through after trying to sell it for 3 months. It was subject to finance for 2 weeks. And then I had a listing on the same day. The client said, yep, we want to go ahead with you. I should have probably known better and gone around and signed it up to sell their property. And then within the space of the 24 hours, that deal fell through, and the client decided to go with another agency, which is about $35,000 worth of income.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't all go to me, by the way. I wish it did. It gets split between the business and everything else. But, that's a bitter pill to swallow. But my thing now is next, and I just move on.
Yep.
I don't dwell on it, because if you do, it's just going to eat away at you. So once again, mental thing, just going to move on.
Let's go through team culture and why you think that's so important.
Yep.
And you've spoken about it before, and how do you create that team culture?
Yeah, so essentially we've got a purpose. So we've got a purpose within the business, which is to enrich the lives of those that we meet every single day through property. So that's our purpose. And then we've got a set of six values, which I won't go through, but it's all about adapting to technology, which we did very well during COVID. It's about having a team-first mentality. It's about helping out our community. So we've got those values that we run through, we display, and we obviously want to see the staff do that. But I personally, or Eliza or Matt, we live those as well.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that from a leadership point of view, no one else is going to follow you.
Yeah.
Why would they?
Yeah.
But I think when a team, and we've had a lot of people leave over the last 6 months because real estate people aren't making the income they have, and it'll be very tough, I think, for the next 18 months as well. So a lot of people have gotten out of the industry, but the core people we've got there, I see working in our business for the next 10 plus years, and they'll grow within their roles. They show initiative, which is one of our other values. They're proactive. They're always stepping up. And when you have those people working in your business, you can go to the next level.
Yep.
Like, it's easy to do that. But that's taken me 6 years to build that,
yep,
to find the right fit, to find Eliza, to find Matt, to, you know, Laura, Jasmine, Kate Sevenson, you know, like all these people that are actually local in the Westies. And find those people that are going to be there for the foreseeable future.
So how do you, being a commission-based in terms of selling houses, but also your other team,
yep,
how do you go about showing them growth within your organisation to be able to keep them for a long period of time? Because people, yep, as you know, people are in a workforce to get paid, but they need to see continuous growth, otherwise they look for other jobs, or they're not getting the sales, they move on.
Yep.
So how do you do that internally?
So in a sales side of the business, it's very simple that you want to build your team within the team. So like Matt, for instance, would start out by himself. Now he's got Peter that works for him, who does all of his kind of buyer work, helps him out with the overflow of business. And he's got obviously Laura that does all of his admin, right? So, but that's within the business. But essentially at the start, he was by himself. And it's not really until, it's very simple. The more sales you make, the more you can afford to put people on. And then now, you know, he's got a young girl. It frees him up to not work 6 or 7 days,
yep,
a week. That's the sales side of the business.
So is each, yep, like, is each sales consultant then look at their, is it their own business within a business, like you said, but like, so then he'll employ them, or like, how does that go?
Well, if you look at like the $1 million listing shows in America, mate, they've got like 20 people that work in their team,
yep,
within the actual real estate firm,
yep, right?
That's not really too common in Australia. What happens in Australia is you generally have, like, if you can get to 4 or 5 people working in your team, you're making a lot of money.
Yep.
Like, you're making more than doctors. And we're very fortunate that we can make more than doctors in our industry with no income.
Yep.
But that's kind of how it works in a sales platform. But, you know, Laura, for instance, we want her to kind of grow into a HR role long term as the business grows and kind of oversee the management, which will allow me to get back on the tools and do what I'm good at.
Yep.
Whereas at the moment, you know, I'm managing people. So we look at 5 or 10 years down the track of where we want to be and hire now for those roles. And it is tough because we're not making as many sales as we were, and income's not as big as it was 2 years ago, or the revenue. But if you just push through those times, when you come out of it, I think you'll flourish.
So right now, would you say you're more working on the business or in the business?
Definitely on it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
To grow it.
To grow it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is, I think that's the hardest thing as a business owner, is to be able to find that balance. Is to, how many hours do I need to be putting in it to make sure it's running the way I want it to run? But also then, if you don't work on the business and it doesn't grow at all, it ends up going the other way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a really fine line, but I think I've kind of got that balance now. For me, for the next kind of 12 months, it's about just staying where we've been and staying consistent,
yep,
not going backwards, not going forwards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the market, the economy, I could talk all day about it, but you know, the market, the economy, it's going to be tough for real estate the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go into that in a second. So family life, work balance, how do you deal with, I guess, having two kids and then obviously, I mean, you want to be fit and healthy and then running a business?
So basically, yeah, it's – so in answer to this question, there's no – when you're running a business, there's no balance, okay? You have some – really good times that will allow you to free up and, you know, spend a bit more time with the kids. So, yeah, with the kids, it's hard to – sometimes it is hard to find that balance. Running a business, things pop up, whatnot. But I think they are – well, my health is my number one priority, right? So that for me now, because someone once told me if you don't have health as your number one priority, you can't give all you can give to your family or to your business, mentally and whatnot, right? So I'm not saying that family isn't number one, but if I'm not healthy, then there's so much that I can't do. So, but then obviously family and business are two and three. So I think it's just working through when I can, and I've got a quiet week. So like 2 weeks ago, it was quiet, had pretty cruisy 2 days, took the kids to the beach. But then last week, 3 nights in a row, I was pretty much in the office until 9:15 getting through stuff. And then I would take, you know, I'd take the kids to childcare or whatnot. But I think anyone that runs a business will totally get that there's no balance.
Mm.
There's no balance. As bad as that sounds, but I absolutely love it because I think you can control your life. I don't think I could ever work for anyone ever again.
Yeah.
You can control your life, your destiny. I'm really fortunate this year. We're going away for some time. And, you know, it just kind of, it gives you options versus working for someone. You've got your 4 weeks off a year and you're really controlled by someone else.
Yep.
So, yeah. So
what does a normal day look like in terms of your book?
So for me, I love having a normal week because a normal day, once again, could get thrown out the window. But for a normal week for me is coming into this place 6 days a week, ideally doing a double sesh, so 4:30 into 5:30 boxing once a week. And I've got a sauna at home. So once again, that health thing, I have a cold shower every single day. And for me, you know that if you do a cold shower every day for 3 minutes, your fight or flight response improves 530%. Right. Wow. I was looking at this, the Huberman Lab podcast.
Yep.
So it's funny, Eliza hasn't wanted to do it. Then she watched Liam, Chris Hemsworth on Limitless do cold showers, and now she's obsessed with it. She didn't listen to me for 12 months. So I was like, far out, you're kidding me, are you? Anyway, so I'm geez, top off. So yeah, we both do that now, which is amazing. And, you know, she comes in here as well, and we're both really into our fitness. So for me, it's first and foremost making sure I have those good weeks. Because if I have good weeks in the gym, I have good weeks at work.
Yep.
But typically, I will do 5:30. Eliza will do 7:30. I'll drop the kids off to childcare. I'm normally in the office by 9. Like, I don't really get into the office anymore by 7:38. I can't. And essentially from 8 till 12, I'm doing emails, admin stuff, meetings with the team. And really from kind of 1 o'clock after lunch until like tonight, I'm working till 8 o'clock, I'm meeting clients.
Yep.
It's pretty simple in terms of the routine of the work. It's more so a numbers game. The more clients, the more people I speak to, the more business you're going to do. Real estate, it isn't a complicated game, mate. It's pretty simple. And my dad told me that from day one. You've just got to do the work.
Yep. Put the work in.
Yep. Yep.
Tell me what it's like working with doing with your wife. I know, you know what I mean? Like, I have the same thing. Like, just, it's sort of, you're always, I guess, even at home, like, how do you go? I don't know if you're the same, but like, we're always talking about work.
Oh,
like, it's nonstop. Yep. Like,
we've tried to have chats around not doing it at home.
Yep.
Never happens.
Yep.
Like, all right, we're going to stop now, you know, phone off, no laptop. But it never does. You know, Eliza's amazing. She's like our financial officer. She will do everything financially, wages, bank accounts, which, you know, I want someone in that regard that I can trust, and she's that person. But put it this way, when she first started with us, she literally sat the desk next to me. And now I am in a completely different office and she is out of earshot. So, yeah. Because otherwise you spend 24 hours a day joined at the hip. As much as I love her and we have an amazing marriage and, marriage isn't easy. It's constant work, but wouldn't have it any other way. But it wasn't healthy. Like, we just had to have that space and that separation. But we're on the phone all the time because she has to call me about clients and transferring money and this happened and blah, 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 blah. So I think we've got the hang of it now. The first 2 years, though, were really tough. Like, we got engaged and got married and she was working in the business. But now, after a lot of water's gone under the bridge, we've got a beautiful work relationship. Yep.
Good. Yep. It's obviously, it is a hard thing.
It's not for everyone.
No, it's not. And even we've had those discussions at home as well in terms of being off our phone and being off work and more so obviously with myself, but just being more present at home with the kids. But even just like in terms of going home and putting the stress on or communicating work stuff to her, I've come to the realization that, there's no need for her to know certain stuff that's going on here because it's just going to stress her out. We've got a team here that works extremely hard that we manage things that doesn't need her thinking about it nonstop because she doesn't need to work in that environment. That's not her.
But she cares.
It's not her role.
She cares. Wants to make sure you're okay as well.
Yeah, exactly. And she knows, they know when something's up. And half the time I'm saying, nothing's wrong. And there is nothing wrong, but she's just always on me in terms of what's going on, everything all good. I guess it's probably from the past we've come to that, you can be on that high stress, just always thinking something's wrong when it doesn't need to be.
No. I think when you've got good people there that you can rely on, your stress really dissipates very quickly.
100%.
So I think that's probably, that's the most important. When you've got good people, but when you take it all on, that's probably where we were when she first started. It's a completely different story.
Mm. So let's talk about the market now really quickly. Yep. So give me a snapshot of like where we're sitting with buying and selling and interest rates going up and stuff like that. What's your intake on it?
I don't watch the news at all. I, once again, mental side of things, that was the first thing, one of the things I decided to do about 6 years ago. Really? I don't watch the news. Yep. It kills Eliza. Eliza loves watching the Today Show and I can't watch it in the morning. So funnily enough, now you got kids, they want to watch Wiggles and Coco Melon, which is great. But what I do is I stay informed from certain aspects that are well informed and they've got a measured approach, right? And the market now, it's very simple. It's the old asset rich, cash poor situation. But if you've got the cash, it is the best time to buy that I've probably seen since the GFC in 2008. And that's going back a long, long time. That's when I first started pretty much full time, as I said before. We're probably going to see another 10% drop this year off the back of 15% last year. So they've come out, the RBA, and said, and the big four banks, that all the gains made through COVID, which was about 25% nationwide, will get wiped. So we'll be back to essentially the end of 2019 property prices, which, people want to always go back in time, but you can soon because property prices will be at that sort of level. So it'll be at a phenomenal time to buy. It's going to be a very tough time for investors, especially the gap between mortgage rates and the rent they're getting from a tenant is just going to get wider and wider.
Yep.
And I'm getting inundated by phone calls from people wanting to sell their investment properties because they just physically can't afford to hold on to it. Cost of living's going up. The inflation's not coming down. What's going on with China and the war in Ukraine, I could talk about it all day. But the world in general is in a very interesting space in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yep.
I think beyond that, we'll be fine. Everything's all good. But, we're already starting to see a lot of people just trying to tighten the belt, really. And that's what the RBA wants. But I think the hardest thing is that after the interest rate we had the other week, they've now come out and said that they actually don't know how far interest rates will go. Whereas the week before that, they said there'll probably be one to two more. And this is off a bank that said that interest rates will not go up until the end of 2024 in 2001. And then everyone went out and borrowed money and bought properties and got leveraged to the hill. And now everyone's obviously pretty upset with what's going on. So essentially not great to sell, great time to buy.
So how do you go with, I guess, your job with that then? If you, I mean, not, it's hard to sell. Is it more like people are selling because they have to?
Yeah. I've seen markets like it, you know, people will always have to sell and buy, but it is impossible to make as much money in these sort of markets as you make in a boom market. So, you know, as a business, we've really tightened our expenses. We've reviewed every single aspect of what we do. We've cut out a lot of fat to make sure that we can make it through and be profitable during this time. And once again, it comes, like, I didn't know about P&L statements and paying your PAYG and BAS. You just learn all this stuff on the go. And no matter what, the ATO always gets their money, mate.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
So, but yeah, like just really making sure and, you know, that you've still got a really tight business. But the simple fact is that this year, we won't be making as many sales. We've got a good property management business, which essentially keeps you afloat during this time because it's the constant income that you get from rental properties. But it is hard. It is hard. And, you know, we've had, just so everyone knows, we've had the fastest rate of interest rate rises since before the 1990s. And we're probably in line for the fastest rate rises in the history of rate rises, to be honest. This has never been seen before. So it's pretty interesting times.
It is. So tell me, there's obviously a lot of competition out there in terms of real estate. Why should people go with Buxton Real Estate? Why should they go with yourself?
I feel like I'm in a listing presentation. Do you get a property to sell? Okay, well, here we go. Look, I think first and foremost in this market here, experience, track record is unmatched. And the simple fact is, I say this to a lot of clients now, when we went to Fiji last year, Eliza and I got on this boat. It was pitch black at night to go to this island with the, you know, three most important people in my life on the boat. And if the driver said to me, I said, oh, mate, have you done this a few times? If he said to me, oh, look, this is actually my second day on the job and it was choppy and it's a 45-minute ride, but you'll be fine. We probably would have been a bit iffy. But he said to me, he goes, mate, I've been doing this for 6 years. We'll get there in about 35 to 45. It'll be a bit choppy, but you'll be fine. You're in safe hands. Straight away that reassurance, real sweet, right?
Yeah.
And I say that to clients now that you need people to guide you through the choppy water, because if you've got someone that's only been in real estate for 3 to 6 months, they haven't got that experience, you're going to struggle at the start. But naturally, I've grown up in the inner west. I know this area better than anyone else.
Yep.
A lot of agents don't really live locally as well. And even though I'm the managing director, any property I personally take on, I manage from start to finish. They don't get handballed to someone else in the office.
Yep.
So they've got that constant communication rapport with me.
I think that's definitely different.
Day one. So
different to others.
Definitely. A lot of people will list it and they'll just handball it to a young kid in the office. We've never been about that. We're a very boutique brand. Any business we take on, we're hands on with it.
Yeah. Last thing I want to go through is just, I heard you're a massive with goal setting. So talk to me about, I mean, the next 5 years and how you set goals and why you do that.
So every New Year's Eve, Eliza and I go through our goals. And then last few years we've filmed a video pretending that we are 12 months down the track and what we've achieved in that year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that positive visualization, blah, 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 which has been cool because the last couple of years, funnily enough, COVID aside, we've actually achieved. So we wanted to buy the actual premises of our office, which we did. We changed to Buxton. We had Sunny, we had Raf. We bought our kind of forever home, which we want to renovate eventually. All these kind of personal things.
Yep.
Business-wise, there are a few things that I wanted to do sales-wise and volume-wise, which we did. But that's probably one of the big things that we've been doing for a couple of years now. The other thing, which actually no one knows about, not even Eliza, but I film a journal every night because I'm a lefty, right? So I've got the worst handwriting in the world. So every night I go into the garage and I film a video about that day. And what that allows me to do is anything that's happened that's good or bad, I just get off my chest and basically tomorrow is a new day. And they've, you know, statistically they've shown that journaling is great. So I've been doing that. But goal setting for me this year isn't about, you know, I want to make 100 sales or I want to buy a car or all that sort of stuff. My goals are very simple this year. It's all about being. So I want to be more humble than ever. I want to be the best husband ever, the best work colleague. I want to be the fittest person ever. I want to have a so it's all about being, and I've got about 20 of those in my phone, in my notes.
Yep.
And I literally just look at them every day, and that's what pulls me back into line, because I know if I do that as a human being, work, business, money, family, everything else will follow.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think goal setting in general is probably not done enough. And, do you know what I mean, when you see someone like yourself who takes it so serious, you can understand, I guess, how you've got to where you are right now. And it's been a really interesting story about seeing, do you know what I mean, from the private school upbringing, the family dynamics of how close you guys were and how, do you know what I mean, close you are with your sister and I guess how you've brought your family on and where you see your family going in terms of being exactly like that. And just obviously taking on the business at 24, such a young age, not knowing, I mean, really anything in terms of what needed to be done. But then it comes back to that sort of work ethic of I have to get this done. And when you pulled yourself into line, or your mum did, I mean, the things that you've done since then have been amazing. And I think you should be extremely proud of yourself, to be honest with you.
And thanks for having me, mate. It's, yeah, like I remember that time we were at up in Smoke in Footscray, and I was at another gym, which was pretty crappy. And you said, mate, I'm going to get you over one day. And I've never looked back, mate. I'll never go to another gym. Honestly, what you've done here is amazing. And, yeah, you're the credit to you, mate. Credit
I
to
really
you.
Appreciate it. Well, look forward to getting on our next episode next week. Today was all about business and story behind Tristan Tomasino and Buxton Real Estate. So make sure you get onto Buxton if you're looking to sell or buy a house, rent a house, anything. Real estate, Buxton is your go. I'm telling you, I could be a real estate agent. When he goes away, you watch out. I'm going to take over. One, yeah. Two, three, it's sold.
Auctioneer for hire.
So, yeah, thanks for tuning in, and make sure you give us a like and a share, and we'll see you next week.